Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 5th day of March, 2022. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and after a week of some of the biggest whoppers and outright in-your-face propaganda in recent memory, if not in American history, will there or will there not be nuclear war? Did the United States just initiate a financial version of nuclear war against Russia? And have the American people been dumbed down enough by now to have their attention and their focus shifted so quickly from the booga booga flu to the booga boogie man that they don't even notice when they're being manipulated? And oh yeah, did anybody actually watch the senile imposter give the gaffe of the union speech earlier this week, other than cackling nutcase Nancy Pelosi? And I guess I could add, why are Americans supposed to be so concerned about the invasion of Ukraine when they've got a far bigger invasion been going on for far longer in Texas? And if they had any actual economic understanding, they'd recognize that the real people who are being sanctioned are the ones they see in the mirror. Well, obviously, there's a whole lot of news to recap this week, and we'll get to that over the next few minutes. But what I want to start off with is probably the most important, and I have no doubt about it, undoubtedly going to be the most underreported of all of them. So far, it's basically single-sourced, and given the intended silence, it'll probably be early next week before we begin to see how it's actually going to shake out. But it does look like suicide by Swift is coming to a head. In response to the unprecedented attack on the Russian currency, the ruble, a bill has been submitted to the Russian Duma to return Russia to the gold standard and remove the value-added tax on bullion. And in one fell swoop, says Hal Turner's coverage, Russia has just made the Russian ruble the single most stable currency in the entire world. And moreover, he says, and I can't quite quote this, they just, let's just say, put it to the U.S. dollar and euro so badly that neither currency, which were both pretty well dead men walking anyway, is likely to survive. Now, a quick aside here, folks. It's a point your host has made before. Truth is, there has never, ever in human history been a fiat currency like the dollar or the euro or most any other currency on planet Earth at this point, except now for the ruble, that has ever survived long-term anyway. And he adds a couple of cogent observations about invasions and wars. When Libya's Muammar Gaddafi tried to introduce a gold-backed currency for all of Africa, the West invaded Libya, overthrew him, and stole 66 tons of Libyan gold. When Saddam Hussein in Iraq announced that he intended to start selling oil and currencies other than the U.S. dollar, 2 months later, there was Iraq War II, and they hung him for that. And maybe that explains why Sean Hannity and Lindsey Graham suddenly want Putin dead. Yeah, we'll probably come back to that in a minute. And the result was that the totally fiat U.S. dollar was able, for a while longer at least, to maintain its monopoly on being the sole global reserve currency. And the SWIFT system, along with the inability of other countries to trade for their oil in anything except petrodollars, was a big part of that. But it does increasingly look like the new regime that overthrew Washington has put a wooden stake in that, too. We'll review some of the events from earlier in the week in just a minute, but I do want to start off with a quick headline review as we enter the weekend to give us an understanding of at least a few of the things that the mainstream media would prefer you not be aware of. As most of Europe tells Russia to go pound salt, Russia has closed off natural gas pipeline flows, and as a result, says an early morning Friday headline from Zero Hedge, European natural gas has surged to, say it with me folks, new record highs. Evidently, economic warfare can cut both ways. But wait, there's more. One of the world's biggest ocean shipping companies, Maersk, warned that there are going to be delays due to sanctions, and they're spoiling food and medical supplies, which may not end up making it into Russia anyway. They announced on Tuesday that they were cutting service to Russia to comply with the new sanctions, but still allowing exemptions for food, medical, and humanitarian goods. But now the Denmark-based company is warning against bookings because there are going to be delays, and anything perishable would probably end up not making it anyway. For their part, Russia has now recommended a halt to all exports from their fertilizer makers. That means a whole lot of countries that are dangerously and almost exclusively reliant on Russia and Ukraine for their wheat imports, including Turkey, Egypt, Tunisia, and others, may be in a whole heap of trouble. And now it's pretty clear that the coming food crisis will strike every country that uses food fertilizer, even from other sources. Because not only are fertilizer prices headed through the roof already, but food prices will soon follow. Case in point, also from Zero Hedge, just hours after they reported that Russia had effectively banned fertilizer exports, Hungary, one of Europe's most grain-rich nations, has circled the wagons, realizing which way the wind is blowing, and just announced that they too will be banning all grain exports, effective immediately. From there, let's talk irony so deep you have to cut it with a hypersonic missile. For example, from Fox News, which some people still think is conservative, Sean Hannity has suggested that Putin should be assassinated, claiming that the Russian leader has, quote, forfeited his right to live, saying that you need to cut the head off the snake and you kill the snake. Right now, he said, that snake is Vladimir Putin. Not to be outdone, the evil Lindsey Graham, alleged respected senator from South Carolina, called for somebody to, quote, take this guy out. You'd be doing our country and the world, he said, a great service, referring to the assassination of an elected leader by somebody somewhere, a la Brutus in Julius Caesar. Rightfully, Anatoly Antonov, the Russian ambassador to the United States, said the remarks were, quote, irresponsible and dangerous, and maybe that's a gross understatement. In the statement, he also said that the degree of Russophobia and hatred in the USA toward Russia is off the charts, adding that it's unbelievable that a country's senator preaching moral values as a guiding star to all mankind could afford a call on terrorism as a way to achieve Washington's goals in the international arena. And note, folks, this is a rhino who couldn't even be bothered to call out an unelected imposter in the Oval Office for stealing an election and then trying to force not only America's military, but hundreds of millions of Americans, whether they liked it or not, to submit to potentially lethal injections in the biggest medical experiment in human history, and arguably a crime against humanity. And no, he hasn't even called for the impeachment of that slime bag. Let's put this in perspective again. Almost 60 years ago, President John F. Kennedy threatened to invade Cuba for the exact same reason that Vladimir Putin first warned about repeatedly for month after month and then did invade Ukraine. The difference seems to be that Khrushchev back then, unlike Biden, isn't senile. And his advisors weren't insane or worse and knew when to back down from threatening the world with nuclear annihilation. Now we've got shameless, hypocritical idiots masquerading as rhinos like Lindsey Graham and Rob Portman of Ohio, who called Russia's attack on Ukraine an unprovoked invasion of a democracy, saying it must not be allowed to stand. And I kind of wonder, where was he when the unprovoked invasion, and yeah, call it an attack on democracy, if you're that ignorant of the form of government we were supposed to have, destroyed the United States Republic and installed a puppet dictator? To call these people shameless whores is a literal insult to honest ladies of the night. And if they really want to see an invasion, tell them to look to the southern border of Texas. It really bugs me, folks, to see limp-wristed, absolutely idiotic, dumbed-down Americans cheerleading for the Ukrainians to fight for their democracy, while they allow their futures to be stolen, their children to be first muzzled, then injected, their country to be taken over from within and invaded from without, and they prattle about democracy while they don't even know what form of government they were once supposed to have. So this obviously fits here. Another one of those stupid on steroids stories, courtesy of nutcase Nancy Pelosi, speaker for the traitors, who's told American representatives in Congress, especially Republicans, if they have a problem with the most massive military failure in American history, i.e. the Biden regime having gotten 13 servicemen and women killed at the airport, abandoned thousands of Americans, and armed the Taliban, they just need to, quote, shut up. Evidently, she didn't like Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert, both having heckled Biden during his gaffe-filled so-called State of the Union address, where he talked about flag-draped coffins, and she cackled when he referred to the smoke from burn pits. Said Colorado Representative Lauren Boebert, after being criticized for daring to interrupt the senile one during his teleprompter read, quote, the left is pissed because I called out Biden's botched withdrawal from Afghanistan that left 13 of America's finest in flag-draped coffins. They're mad because a speech was, quote, interrupted. Well, she said, ask the families who lost their loved ones how interrupted their lives are now. Responding to nutcase Nancy, she said, I won't shut up about Biden's failure in Afghanistan and the 13 heroes we lost because of it. But on the irony scale, we're still not done yet. Earlier in the week, to Facebook, Twitter, and Gulag all announced, Achtung, we will be censoring any reporting out of Ukraine that we don't like. Anything that they call misinformation or disinformation that doesn't tout the party line. An announcement that just might have made the old Soviet-era Pravda and Izvestia propaganda outlets blush. But now there's this. It's covered in several places, but I'll Zero Hedge's summary. Following earlier news that Russia, following suit now, will also criminalize disinformation about their military and the crackdown on fake information. Basically, both sides are doing the exact same thing. And they're echoing the wholesale canceling and deplatform of Western media outlets that don't parrot the official narrative. Mid-Friday morning, the BBC, the British Broadcasting Crapola, announced that they would, quote, temporarily suspend the work of all BBC news journalists, sick, and support staff within the Russian Federation, while that so-called news agency assesses the full implications of this latest development. Evidently, they don't need to be in Russia or anywhere in the area in order to report on what they think you ought to think is going on there. The safety of our staff is paramount, said their statement, and we remain committed to, quote, making accurate, independent information available to audiences around the world. Unquote. And yeah, Tyler Durden nails it. Is this an open admission that the BBC produces fake news? From there, let's go back to earlier in the week. Tuesday morning, to be precise, after the District of Criminals hosted the biggest puppet show in the history of the swamp. And honestly, folks, I could care less how many gaffes the Marionette in Chief made, or how well his Alzheimer's drugs worked, or even how many whoppers he threw out to insult Americans' intelligence. Because that, at least, pretty well describes the whole speech. Starting with the fearlessness of the Ukrainian people, who are, at least we're told, defending their border, unlike Texans, New Mexicans, or Arizonans. He didn't say that, of course. He did try to claim that we've learned a lesson. When dictators do not pay a price for their aggression, they cause more chaos. Well, arguably that's true, and anybody who tuned into that charade saw it play out right before their eyes. The irony is, and most of the assembled idiots no doubt missed it, he then went on to describe how the United States has openly engaged in outright acts of war against Russia. If there were anybody but Communist China doing this to the United States, even the Do-Nothing Congress might have decided it was time to declare war on that aggressor. We're inflicting pain on Russia, he said. We're cutting off Russia's largest banks from the international financial system. We're choking off Russia's access to technology that will sap its economic strength and weaken its military for years to come. Well, wait a minute. He's doing exactly that to the United States, too, and they haven't declared war on him yet. They've declared war on the Russian ruble, war on the Russian stock market. He was proud of the carnage they've already inflicted on the Russian economy, arguably almost as much damage as he's done to the American economy. And clearly the intent is to completely destroy Russia's energy industry, just like he did the United States. Now, folks, let me make this clear up front. I did not, could not sit through this whole thing and watch that puppet read his lines. But I did force myself to read the entire transcript of what he was supposed to say. And I do want to play at least a clip or two, including this one I think is probably the most revealing of the entire charade, in which he starts by saying how proud he is that the United States is the number one exporter of Zyklon B injections and outright poison to the entire world. Oh yeah, when it comes to genocide, we're number one.
We'll continue vaccinating the world. We've sent 475 million vaccine doses to 112 countries, more than any nation on earth. We won't stop.
And who knows how many millions we've already killed, but one thing's for sure, millions upon millions more are going to die. Pat yourselves on the back. And here he departs from the script and has another Biden moment. Who knows what the point was supposed to be, but somehow or other he's got a wall on the mind because that's not what he's going to allow to happen in Texas.
We won't stop. Because you can't build a wall high enough to keep out a vaccine. The vaccine can stop the spread of these diseases.
Okay, there's a stinking fetid whopper, but it's not like we haven't heard that one before, is it? But he's just getting warmed up. Listen to how this continues.
You know, we've lost so much in COVID-19. Time with one another.
The entire U.S. economy.
The worst of all, much the loss of life.
Here it comes. He almost said it. The Great Reset.
Let's use this moment to reset. So stop looking at COVID as a partisan dividing line. See it for what it is, a god-awful disease.
No, it's a bioweapon, and that may have been the biggest whopper of the night. Oh, and notice how he's subtly trying to blame God, rather than that satanic minion who plays him on TV? And he followed that up with what's arguably the cheap shot of the night, about how we've been divided, because some people, I guess, don't want to commit suicide, others want them to die. But we can change, he said, how we move forward on COVID-19 and other issues, like genocide, evidently, that we must face together. Shameless and certainly Stalinistic. And I guess I've got one more clip before we move on. The most shameless whopper of the night. Actually, a series of them. About how gang raping the Second Amendment isn't really infringing anything. Because we could care less about, well, maybe here he's parroting George W. Bush, that GD piece of paper. And listen to how the assembled anti-constitutional fascists are just eating it up.
I ask Democrats and Republicans alike to pass my budget and keep our neighborhoods safe.
Yeah, we'll bring San Francisco and Chicago to you.
And we'll do everything in my power to crack down on gun trafficking of ghost guns that you can buy online, assemble at home, no serial numbers, can't be traced. I ask Congress to pass proven measures to reduce gun violence, pass universal background checks. Why should anyone on the terrorist list be able to purchase a weapon? Why? Why?
And that means you, you deplorable you, you gun-toting, Bible-toting white supremacist who won't wear your mask and take your poke when we command it and won't surrender your business or your children when we command that. We're going to take your guns away. Yeah, we'll pry them from your cold, dead fingers. And if you've been following the news, you know we've already got them on a list.
Pass universal background checks. Why should anyone on the terrorist list be able to purchase a weapon? Why? Why? And folks, ban assault weapons with high-capacity magazines that hold up 100 rounds. You think the deer are wearing Kevlar vests?
So this is how liberty dies. With thunderous applause.
Look, repeal the liability shield that makes gun manufacturers the only industry in America that can't be sued. The only one.
And there it is. The biggest whopper day, two-day whoppers of the evening. He didn't forget that the COVID-not vaccine manufacturers have been given complete liability protection against everybody that they kill and injure. By any measure, 150 times more people have already been killed in 1 year alone by the Zyklon B injections than even the most inflated so-called gun violence statistics from the far left would claim.
Look, repeal the liability shield that makes gun manufacturers the only industry in America that can't be sued. The only one. Imagine had we done that with the tobacco manufacturers. These laws don't infringe on the Second Amendment. They save lives.
That's my story. Oh, that's my story. My story, and I'm sticking to it.
All right, from there, let's talk about some important news. Also, though, about what you're not going to hear, because the truth is pretty much verboten in Biden's new Soviet America. And the irony there is downright suffocating. And I followed up on this next story earlier, but let's now close the loop. Some of you may recall the joke about censorship in the old Soviet Union. In Pravda, there's no truth, and in Izvestia, there's no news. Referring to their two major Ministry of Truth propaganda outlets. And arguably, the WAPO, New York Times, and CNN make them look almost honest by comparison. But now we've gone way beyond that. We've got two Facebook, Gulag, and Twitter, who are, says the Gateway Pundit, while they still can, colluding to ensure that Westerners only receive one narrative, and it's the official one, surrounding coverage of the conflict in Ukraine as World War III kicks into high gear in an effort, they claim, to stop the spread of, oh yeah, say it with me, folks, misinformation. That means anything you're not going to be allowed to hear, much less talk about. Following pressure from, oh, in this case, they claim it's the European Union, the Union of European Soviet States, as well as socialist media giants and big tech platforms, which are now restricting Russian news networks, including RT and Sputnik, from using their platforms. On Saturday, Meta, which is the new name for two Facebook's parent company, and Gulag demonetized and banned advertising from RT and other Russia-backed channels, barring the companies from earning revenue from any content that reported on what they call the invasion. But that wasn't enough. The EU then demanded that the tech giants take additional steps to put an end to free speech and the First Amendment, even if it doesn't actually apply over there, and take additional steps to censor and ban disinformation agents. whereupon the EU announced they were going to ban Kremlin-based media outlets and take, quote, unprecedented measures to censor Russia, Russia, Russia. Yeah, said the EU's president, we are developing tools to ban their toxic and harmful disinformation in Europe. And you're not going to be allowed to hear it in America with a K either. And as we saw later on in the week, Russia took a lesson from Soviet America and did likewise. Gulag chimed in on Tuesday, saying they too would censor anything they don't want you to know about, and its subsidiary YouTube will block channels connected to, quote, RT und Sputnik across Europe, effective immediately. And no surprise, the CCP-owned TikTok also joined in the scrum. At this point, I do think it's apropos to point out that even some leftist outlets, like Bloomberg, have been reporting on the fact that some, indeed a whole lot, of the video footage allegedly showing Russia, Russia, Russian atrocities in Ukraine were actually taken from video games. One called Arma 3 seems to be the popular favorite. Evidently, it's very realistic, makes it easy to fool people, especially if socialist media lets it happen, while they censor things that don't fit the official narrative. Another's called DCS World. And, say these stories, these videos have been spread on socialist media claiming to be footage from the Ukraine war. When you see all the propaganda and you remember one more time that truth is the first casualty in war, maybe it's time to pull out the old 1997 movie classic Wag the Dog with Dustin Hoffman and review the salient facts. The bigger trouble is people will figure out that this war really is real. When either the lights go out, the big bright flash hits New York City, or the tsunami bombs take out both coasts. This next item comes courtesy of Paul Joseph Watson in his Summit News, and he suggests it's a harbinger of things to come. Your host can't help but agree. Russians attempting to use Apple Pay and Gulag Pay, two of the big tech public-private partners that aim to control financial systems in the U.S., and obviously the rest of the world too, found that their access had been blocked, this time causing chaos in the Moscow metro system. Irish journalist Jason Corcoran, says Watson, tweeted an image which shows long queues at the Moscow metro station after both of those payment systems stopped working, or was it sabotaged, for Russians, leaving people to fumble about for cash, tweeted Corcoran. Said The Verge, customers at a number of banks in Russia can no longer use their Big Brother Big Tech-approved bank cards with Gulag Pay and Apple Pay due to newly imposed financial sanctions on the country, noting that such payment methods are actually less popular in Russia than they are in much of the West. And while customers can still use bank cards from these institutions within Russia, they'll no longer work abroad or when making online payments to stores and services belonging to countries that have issued sanctions on Russia, or in other words, that are part of the fascist global world system. You know the name, the Biden puppets jonesing for it, the New World Order. Said one local, given the keys of our lives to companies like Apple, Gulag, to Facebook, Twitter, and Amazon, as well as the rest of the digital world, is the biggest mistake for mankind. And as Watson concludes, aside from any argument about what's right and wrong with these opening salvos of World War III, the story underscores how allowing big tech public-private corporate partners to power the control payment systems based on their own moral judgments, or lack thereof, is in fact a dangerous game. What happens, he asks, when such systems become the only available payment option? Answer, folks, you can read it in Revelation chapter 13. Here now, one more important story I'm sure we're going to hear a lot more about. For several weeks, I've been quoting the line from William Shakespeare's famous play, Julius Caesar, Beware the Ides of March, noting that, yeah, we've got World War III on the horizon, and what else? It's great cover for the Fed getting ready to nuke the U.S. economy from within, and the 1.5% rate hike that had been, or maybe still is, scheduled for, what else? March 15th, the next meeting of the Fed's Open Market Committee. And while inflation is clearly already out of control, the Fed was widely expected to announce that 0.5% rate hike on the Ides of March, too little too late, with the idea of allegedly getting a rein on out-of-control inflation, and of course nuking the economy at the same time. And that means all the more reason for a big war as a scapegoat. But wait just a darn minute. On the heels of the State of the Union debacle, Zero Hedge and Tyler Durden say, rest in peace, 50 basis point March rate hike. Yep, Powell has killed it, but leaves the door open for more later in 2022. Moments ago, said the story from Wednesday morning, Fed Chair Powell said he is inclined to support a 25 basis point rate hike in March, which immediately killed any market expectation of a 1-plus rate hike in 2 weeks. But Powell then said if inflation stays hot, and who doesn't think that's going to happen, he can always hike more later on, if the economy doesn't roll over and die first. And we'll be right back.
Wonder I can think at all. And my lack of education hasn't hurt me none. I can read the writing on the wall.
Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening. I am your host, Mark Hall. And let's kick this segment off with some of the stories from later on in the week. The first major Ukrainian city has fallen, says a summary from Zero Hedge, on the southern coast of Ukraine at the Black Sea. AFP reports that Ukrainian officials confirm Russia's capture of the southern city of Kherson, which becomes the first major city in Ukraine, with about 300,000 people, to fall to invading Russian forces. It's also an important port, as is Odessa, to which there's a Russian warship group already en route. And an amphibious assault there, say sources, could still come any day now. Here's one more story from the Daily Mail that's getting a lot of hysterical press. Putin's foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, has likened the U.S. to Nazi Germany. Well, I guess on that score, he's hardly alone. And he's repeated the warning that World War III, already in progress, quote, can only be nuclear, in what they call his latest TV rant. This, at least, was telling. Speaking through a translator, Lavrov said, quote, I'd like to point out that it's in the heads of Western politicians that the idea of a nuclear war is spinning constantly, and not in the heads of Russians. Therefore, I assure you that we will not allow any provocations to throw us off balance. And in separate comments, they say Putin's lackey accused the U.S. of trying to conquer Europe. He told Sky News, quote, Napoleon and Hitler had the objective to have the whole of Europe under their control. Now Americans have got Europe under their control. We see that the situation, what role the EU is really playing in the context of the global situation, they are just fulfilling a role. We see that there's a picture, like in Hollywood, of absolute evil and absolute good, and this is unfortunate. I think, he added, that this hysteria will end and our partners will settle down after a while, and we'll sit down to negotiate, but only on one absolute condition, and that is as equal parties. Now, this story is at least illustrative. It comes from the Truth is the First Casualty of War files. Earlier stories, and your host seems to think there have been a lot of them, suggest that Putin is largely holding back from attacking cities in the Ukraine in order to, as much as possible, avoid civilian casualties. They're encircling them, cutting them off, in the old siege warfare style. But the Western press is accusing him of doing what the U.S. did in Iraq and other places, where massive civilian casualties are famously called collateral damage. Which brings me to so-called coverage from the UK's Daily Mail that says, quote, a delusional Vladimir Putin has again insisted that Russia is not bombing Ukrainian cities, unquote, despite reports of Russian attacks on apartment buildings, schools, and hospitals, many of which, as we've already reported, have turned out to be more video game than actual reality. Anyway, in a conversation with German Chancellor Olaf Scholz Friday evening, he dismissed all reports of Russian attacks on those civilian targets as fake. Which inclines your host to suggest, given the level of censorship here, not to mention openly faked videos, that just about everybody is probably lying, meaning a lot of skepticism, at minimum, is probably appropriate. From there, I want to go next to some comments from Martin Armstrong at Armstrong Economics, who asks the question that we're going to explore in some detail in just a minute here. Has Biden unknowingly begun World War III? Well, I don't think Biden goes to the bathroom knowingly, folks. In financial markets, though, in this case, we have a serious problem, begins Martin Armstrong. I know where the advice to Biden and world leaders is coming from, telling them Now, seize all the assets of Putin's friends and put pressure on him. Their yachts, their bank accounts, their houses, everything. It's Bill Browder, who is Safra's partner in Hermitage Capital Management. All because Putin seized all of his assets over the blackmailing of Yeltsin, who Putin wanted to question and not kill. So that same Browder, he says, is now telling world leaders to confiscate all Russian assets belonging to what he claims are oligarchs. Well, he says, let me make this very clear. This is a complete abandonment of international law and the absence of any due process, which once upon a time was the cornerstone of law globally. And as you might suspect, Martin Armstrong suggests this will have some pretty dire repercussions. And that, folks, is arguably almost an understatement. Next today, I want to spend a few minutes on the most recent analysis by one of the best in the financial business, Zoltan Pozsar, and the related commentary from Tyler Durden at Zero Hedge, who correctly predicted way back in late 2019 the repocalypse, as he called it, that led to the Fed losing control of the overnight repo market, and some of us would suggest more than coincidentally, preceded the COVID-1984 plandemic oh so appropriately. After which, attention shifted from the Fed failure to Fauci's bioweapon as the alleged reason, or scapegoat, for the worldwide government-assisted 2020 economic meltdown. And some of us wouldn't, in fact, did say, right on schedule. Over the weekend, begins the summary here, the world gasped in shock when Western powers announced the nuclear option would be used against Russia in retaliation for them having taken the bait and attacking Ukraine. Exactly as they had long said they would, in order to remove Western and NATO missiles that threatened Russia and Moscow. And now, evidently also exactly as planned, sanctions against the country's central bank and targeted expulsion of key banks from SWIFT, a move which has effectively locked Russia out of the Western financial system and left its vast oil export industry, a key lifeline for the Putin regime, in limbo. But the real reason for the shock, says the story, is that this was the first time the global reserve currency was weaponized against a G20 economy, setting a clear precedent for how the West would and could respond to any other nation that dared follow in Russia's footsteps, something which he says China is clearly contemplating when it comes to Taiwan and is carefully studying just how the West responds to Moscow, depending upon whether Biden falls asleep at the wheel again and pulls another Afghanistan, of course, Taiwan might be the next major domino in the World War III saga to unfold. And here's the real key, folks, and the reason why I think this is so important to pay close attention to. As a result, writes Zero Hedge, following this week's dramatic freeze of Russian central bank overseas assets, this has prompted some to question just why countries would build foreign currency reserves at all, and more broadly, whether the unprecedented Western response to Russia hasn't jeopardized the U.S. fiat dollar's world reserve currency status. In what one Washington lawyer described to Reuters as, quote, the biggest hammer in the woodshed, the G7 and other European Union governments blocked certain Russian banks' access to the SWIFT international payment system and also went even a step further than many expected by paralyzing about half of the Russian central bank's $630 billion worth of foreign currency and gold reserves. And in so doing, the West has undermined Moscow's ability to defend the ruble, which has now lost up to about a quarter of its value since Friday alone, and recapitalize sanctioned banks as they face nascent bank runs. In fact, as some have admitted, it was the explicit intention of the West to spark those bank runs and to crash the Russian financial system from within. Need I say it, folks? People who live in glass houses, especially with a very shaky foundation and a paper roof to boot, shouldn't throw stones, much less try to foment a nuclear war. And while, as intended, this was a huge blow to Russia's economy, Reuters' Mike Dolan wrote that the move quickly prompted questions, as it in fact should, about whether targeting reserve holdings as an act of economic warfare may prompt a major rethink by reserve managers around the globe, not least in countries that may be at loggerheads or face a potential conflict with EU or particularly the tyrannical U.S. government over where to bank their national stash. It's a potentially huge issue for world markets, given that central bank foreign currency reserves totaled a record $12.8 trillion late last year, and that's a rise of $11 trillion over just the past 20 years. This money is held mostly in U.S. and European government bills and bonds, with the U.S. dollar still accounting for almost 60% of that, and the euro about 20%. To be sure, this move did not catch Russia off guard. They've long been aware of the potential risk involved in holding dollars as reserves, and since the annexation of Crimea back in 2014, Russia's central bank has steadily divested its reserves of most U.S. dollar-denominated assets. But the dollar, euro, and pound sterling still account for more than 50% of its holdings, located in France, Germany, Japan, Britain, the United States, Canada, and Australia. And with Moscow and Beijing now increasingly allied on the geopolitical stage, and China refusing to either condemn the Ukraine invasion or to join Western sanctions, hey, why should they? Their puppet is doing just fine for them. China's yuan, which currently accounts for only 2.7% of world reserves, may be one clear option for anxious reserve managers in Moscow or, increasingly, elsewhere. Of course, China itself, for all its fraught relationship with the West, has been the biggest reserve stockpiler since it joined the global trading system 20 years ago amid tight control of its own exchange rate. More than $3 trillion of its $3.22 trillion hoard was amassed just since 2000, precisely to offset foreign inflows and to keep a lid on the yuan. But that's about to change, says Pozar. And did Western sanctions against Russia just mark the beginning of the end of the dollar as the world's reserve currency? Zoltan Pozar is going to explore this in some detail, folks. But since your host hasn't been pulling my punches for quite a while now, I'll just suggest that what's been going on for a number of years now, but has recently come to a head, is not just a successful coup, not just the complete destruction of the American economy, but a complete destruction of the entire world that is based on the fiat dollar, and of course the Great Reset and New World Order that they've been jonesing for oh so long now. In other words, when it comes to the latest move to kick Russia out of SWIFT, the United States not only shot itself in the foot, but has reloaded and is taking aim again. And they're still poking the bear while they're at it. At this point, Pozar himself quotes Berkeley professor and expert on world reserve management, Barry Eichengreen, who reckons that of the two imperatives behind stockpiling of reserves, to intervene or stabilize domestic markets, or as a war chest against things like shocks, disasters, or balance of payments crises, the latter may now be the big question. Quote, the main effect may be declining demand for reserves, he said. And if countries see reserves and foreign exchange management as less useful and available, then they'll have to accept the inevitability that their exchange rates are likely to move by more, he said. In which case, they need to harden their financial systems and economies against exchange rate-related disruptions. For example, by discouraging corporates from borrowing in foreign currency. Gee, and here is he thinking maybe in the dollar? Which in itself could have a profound impact on world markets and on the model for emerging markets and developing countries. And an even more alarming take, says Pozar, comes from former Goldman economist Jeff O'Neill, who said that the Western sanctions could ultimately lead to major reform of the global system. Oh, there you go. Isn't that exactly what Klaus Schwab has been talking about? Amongst the fallout, some countries may see less need to accumulate foreign exchange reserves, he said, adding that that could indeed seed what he called peak reserves worldwide, and it might also make some of the bigger emerging markets think more seriously about reform and opening up their domestic markets, liberalizing and moving away, here we go, from a U.S.-centric system. Unquote. And here's where Tyler Durden and Zero Hedge say the most surprising take comes from that former New York Fed staffer, current repo guru and Credit Suisse money market expert, Zoltan Pozar, who on any other day could be counted on to be a stalwart advocate of the status quo, but who also ominously said that the response to Russia may have set a sequence of events in motion that could eventually lead to the demise of the U.S. dollar as the world reserve currency. Speaking to Bloomberg, Pozar, who this weekend warned that the lockout of Russia from the global financial system could prompt central banks to aggressively pump liquidity to stabilize markets, noted that wars tend to turn into major junctures for global currencies. And with Russia losing access to its foreign currency reserves, a message has now been sent to all countries that they can't count on those money stashes, especially in U.S. dollars, to actually be theirs in the event that there is some, tension. And as such, he echoes the opinions voiced above by others that it may make less and less sense for global reserve managers to hold dollars for safety, as they might well be taken away right when they're most needed. Now, before I go to it, this next comment is almost humorous in context. Of course, says the piece, Russia wasn't the first currency to learn the hard way that dollar reserves can be weaponized at a moment's notice. Last year, the Biden regime's move to seize Afghanistan's cash assets and confiscate that country's gold held at the New York Fed, allegedly at least in hardy har, to prevent access by the Taliban was another such signal that reserves can be frozen. And furthermore, those who count on the U.S. can be, let's just say, have the shaft put to them big time. In hindsight, the Taliban certainly made out like bandits on the whole deal. And maybe Putin's seen the obvious. You're better off pretending to be America's enemy than believing that they're going to have your back. Right, Zelensky? Pozar, the piece continues, similarly to O'Neill, argues that this recognition will encourage central banks to diversify away from the almighty fiat U.S. dollar, or at least try to re-anchor their currencies to assets that are less susceptible to influence from U.S. or European governments. And as such, recent tensions could usher in a new monetary order in which currencies and countries are far less interconnected through international bank accounts and reserves. Speaking to the Odd Lots podcast, Pozar said that, quote, most FX reserves that exist in the world today are all forms of inside money, i.e., they're the liabilities of someone. And as a reminder, notes Zero Hedge, and they've explained over the weekend, central bank deposits, and securities are all inside money, money and claims that are like money that are someone else's liability. And it's situations like this when outside money, or money claims like, well, gold bullion that are no one's liability, is king, especially if they're stored in vaults or places where, well, let's just say, untrustworthy governments can't easily get to them. Unlike balances at the Deutsche Bundesbank, Western GSIBs, or Euroclear, you can control what you have. Echoing what he said over the weekend, Pozar told Bloomberg that, quote, whether you hold the sovereign debt of a country, or you keep a deposit at a central bank of a foreign country, or if you keep deposits at Western financial institutions, these are all forms of inside money that you don't control. Someone owes it to you, and those things can be sanctioned. And here, folks, let me elaborate just a bit. In a very much similar way, but to a much more personalized extent, people in Canada found out that, oh yeah, you don't control your money either. And Big Brother's public-private partners, whether it's GoFMe or a Canadian bank, can steal it from you on a whim. In other words, folks, ultimately it's all about trust and who and what you shouldn't trust. If a central bank is in a situation like this, continued Zoltan Pozar, and the currency is under pressure, would it ever come to having to re-anchor your currency to something, like, say, gold? I think these are all questions, he continued, that should be at the top of our mind. And, notes Zero Hedge, he seemed to forget to mention Bitcoin and other cryptos, which an entire generation, well, rightly or wrongly, now views as digital gold. And here again, folks, your host has to interject. The problem with so-called digital gold is that it relies on a centralized communication scheme and the internet, not to mention the power grid that it runs on, which you don't control, and Big Brother and its public-private partners are certainly trying to. And as we've seen in Canada again, they've been planning on ways to electronically and remotely steal that as well. If the blockchain has a public record, it may very well be that the public-private partnership has a hook in it. And at this point, we come full circle to something that both China and Russia and Zero Hedge and your host and many others have been talking about for quite a while, and that is extricating themselves from the fiat dollar and finding a, better, maybe even more historically appropriate alternative. Said Pozar, quote, I don't know if it'll come to that, but if things get worse, you could basically re-anchor the ruble to a pile of gold because you need an anchor in situations like this, he said, echoing what Zero Hedge notes they've said for years, mainly that in that case, Russia would want to truly extricate itself from the current world reserve currency of the almighty fiat dollar, so it might decide to unveil a gold-backed currency, or one which is co-sponsored by the Chinese yuan, which would then also announce that it is becoming gold-based. Others share this dismal view, the story continues. A few days ago, former Société Générale strategist Dylan Grice, who since co-founded Calderwood Capital, and described the recent moves as a, quote, weaponization of money. You only get to play that card once, he tweeted. China will make it a priority to need no U.S. dollar before going to Taiwan. It's a turning point in monetary history, unquote. And that's a really good point, folks, and it bears another bit of a digression here, because one of the things your host has been suggesting, and I'm not alone in this regard, of course, anybody that's been watching the Biden regime and knows how beholden they are to communist China recognizes that ultimately China does intend to retake Taiwan. The only question is, why haven't they done so already? Given that the Russian bear is playing its part and the distraction is going in full force right now, so maybe Grice's comment gives us a real good clue. And I can't help but wonder if maybe this was a big part of the Chinese plan all along. Why confront Russia yourself when you can get your Biden puppet to do it for you? Then when it's all over, you just swoop in and clean up the American spoils. That part's been obvious. Let Russia take the hit on every front, including now economically. And if they decide to nuke the United States, oh well, you got to break a few eggs to make an omelet. But at least China gets to see how the economic collapse unfolds first, too. And here's the extra piece of the puzzle that by now may be getting a bit clearer. If China wants to watch the response of the United States and SWIFT to the Russian move in Ukraine, it can now sit back and watch, see how the SWIFT system crumbles. And furthermore, while it goes on, they can be divesting themselves of U.S. assets, and pretty much as quietly as possible, while world attention is certainly diverted elsewhere. And again, if Grice is right, that gives us another clue as to the timing. China will not need to invade Taiwan until it has suitably divested itself of enough of its U.S. dollar-denominated assets that they figure, well, whatever's left is just the cost of war anyway. And if you think about it, losing a few hundred billion fiat bucks may be cheaper in the long run than having to absorb a nuclear strike. A similar warning, continues Zero Hedge, was issued by Stephen Englander, former city head of foreign exchange and current managing director at Standard Chartered Bank. Quote, it's a very long-term thing, so nothing immediate, or even say on a 2 to 3 year basis, but if what we are seeing is a demonstration of the power of economic and financial force, the logical response is, if there's a risk that you'll be on the receiving end, is to see what you can do to immunize yourself, he said. Weirdly enough, there may be a second response. What essentially is your potential economic foe importing from you, and what you can do to have the maximum impact on their economy and the least on yours, unquote. And if there was ever a warning for the United States, folks, about an economic reprisal, that may be it. Note how Russia's already using European and, say, particularly German vulnerability to their natural gas exports as a weapon against them. Of course, none of this is a surprise to Russia, says the piece, which has been feverishly rotating out of its inside money dollar reserves, including dumping off of all of its U.S. treasuries in 2018, according to official data, and amassing a record stockpile of gold in the process. In fact, as Pozar noted over the weekend, the Bank of Russia now has more gold than deposits at foreign central banks. And another former Citi strategist, Brent Donnelly, who now runs Spectrum Markets, agreed with Pozar. In a cooperative game, more global trade and the accumulation of foreign exchange reserves makes sense. But in a competitive game, where your currency holdings are issued by an adversary and can be frozen or vaporized at that adversary's discretion, global trade and the accumulation of FX reserves makes less sense, unquote. And here again, folks, the plot starts to thicken. While a growing number of countries, especially those that remain ideologically aligned with Russia, like China and India, may seek to quietly, or even not so quietly, begin to rotate out of their fiat dollars, they face another problem. They'll need to convert those trillions of dollars into something, and for now, the pool of potential suitable assets remains limited. Well, you might be thinking about gold, and no doubt they are. Then again, if one wishes to avoid the fiat system entirely, since within that system every single asset is someone else's liability, and vice versa, one would need to seek refuge outside of that system, i.e., in non-fiat assets. And here, gold, of course, is the most obvious candidate. Although, as Bloomberg notes, there's only so much of it available, which is, of course, the narrow view. After all that would need to happen is for gold to be revalued to make it worth a whole heck of a lot more. Incidentally, it was none other than a PIMCO economic who, back in 2016, suggested that in order to save the economy and devalue the dollar, the Fed should buy gold. And, of course, since their entire existence is anti-constitutional to the core and would literally destroy their very raison d'etre, that, of course, is simply not an option. Stealing it, however, and this is where they're headed next, just like FDR did in 1933, is another thing entirely. So, says Zero Hedge, will the Fed start buying gold in the open market? Yeah, They too doubt it. But just as attention is now turning to regulating, i.e. read banning, cryptos in order to avoid Russian oligarchs, yeah, those are the ones that are going to use it, not you people out there in flyover country, you deplorables you, from using it to bypass sanctions, can you see one more time how they demonize somebody and then use that as an excuse to steal their stuff? Then that becomes an excuse to steal your stuff, along with your rights too? It stands to reason that the next trigger point, as the fiat system continues along its relentless path to terminal disintegration, will, they suggest, be an attempted confiscation of precious metals. It's happened before. Says Tyler Durden in conclusion, it's only a matter of time. But this is where your host has to part company just a bit and say, eh, that's why they're so anxious to steal the firearms first. Because before they can take the rest of your stuff, folks, they have to start with the one piece of property about which the Bill of Rights says shall not be infringed. And if they can steal that, well, then they can come and take everything else too. I guess, again, it seems appropriate today to close with a reminder from the prophetic book of Matthew, chapter 24, where Yeshua says, see that you are not deceived. Because, hey, folks, there's a whole lot of that going on. And as we can already tell, it's only going to get worse. If you're not prepared, folks, for massive inflation at a bare minimum, with societal breakdown, famine, and war as definite possibilities too, it's getting awfully late.